Time for Faith Unscripted, presented by the Clarkstown Reformed Church.
Welcome, everyone, to the Faith Unscripted show, hosted by Clarkstown Reformed Church's own Pastor Rich. The studio line is 845-429-1700. Feel free to call in at any point during the Faith Unscripted program with any questions you may have for Pastor Rich. And as, of course, and as an added bonus, the first new caller on today's show will receive a $25 Visa gift card and an autographed copy of Pastor Rich's book, A Journey of Repentance, Renewal, and Return. And on today's show, we have a special guest. Rabbi Paul Kerlin from the Nanuet Hebrew Center is with us this morning. And now, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, the one, the only, Pastor Rich.
Good morning, everybody, and thanks again for being with us. If you're new to the show, welcome for the first time. And you've got a treat because we are doing a version of a new prototype show. We're going to call it Kibitzing with Kerlin.
That's not a new name.
I don't think you're on. Are you on? There you go.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a new name.
That came from?
It came from the camp I've worked at for about 300 years or so.
Yes.
But can I just say, I am so grateful to be able to be invited to ruin your show, to join your show today.
Well, I always look forward to having you here and to talking with you because you're just a great guy and a wonderful rabbi and a good friend. So.
Well, you can fool some of the people some of the time,
and,
I guess.
And you have fooled me every time.
Yeah, we always have such nice things to say about each other, which is probably why we like to hang out together.
That's true, because nobody else has nice things about me.
That may be true.
So we were talking yesterday, which was, of course, Memorial Day here in the United States, about the way that Israel celebrates Memorial Day. And it struck me as being a very beautiful thing and something that we could probably learn from. So, Paul, could you explain to everybody how Israel does Memorial Day?
So what I'd like to do is first say that I somewhat miss the experiences of my childhood for Memorial Day in the United States. Uh-huh. Because it used to be Memorial Day. It wasn't part of a big weekend, which right. Sometimes it gets lost with that three-day weekend.
Yeah.
And other things replace it, and there seems to be a little bit less, if not a lot less, memorial.
There's an interesting point just there. I had an old friend, he was a Franciscan priest, and when these long weekends first got popular, he was very upset by it because he said, we're losing a sense of celebration. We're losing a sense of celebrating, say, Memorial Day, and letting that day mean what it means. Instead of just being a long weekend when you can have barbecues and things like that, it's a day to remember those who gave their lives in the service of their country and really in the service of our liberty in protecting it or establishing it.
So I often preach to my congregation that I wish we could do a little bit more like Israel does. They earn the right to celebrate their Independence Day because the day before is their Memorial Day, and it is a day of memory.
Yeah.
The schools are actually open in the morning, in which they have gatherings and special ceremonies, sadly, to probably remember those former students who might have died in different wars, etc. But it means that the entire community is focused on memory. The television networks do not have entertainment shows on at all that day. There are a variety of other things, including the names of those who have died in battle, etc. And you just feel that focus on respecting those who gave everything to preserve their freedoms.
The word memory, as you talk, the word memory strikes me as being something important for us to take apart a little bit, because it's not just thinking about something that we used to think about. It's to remember someone. It's to make them present again to us.
To add extra dimensions to who they are, rather than just being a name.
Correct.
To know a little bit more about who they were.
Yeah. And in some ways to make them present again. So we don't lose our honored dead as long as we remember them, because we keep bringing them back into our lives and remembering their significance to us.
And they can continue to be inspirations for us long after they have died.
For one of the members of my congregation yesterday brought a flag that had draped her grandfather's casket, along with his silver star or his bronze star and a number of his other medals. And she just left that in the front of the church. She never knew this man. He died in World War II. Her grandmother then remarried, and that stepfather of her father's became the person she called grandpa. But she is still so proud. She remembers the courage and the heroism of this young man who died in battle in Europe in Patton's army.
I think that that's the power of memory.
Yeah.
And I think that sometimes the next generation inherit the memory, even though they never had the blessing of knowing that person. To tug at people's heartstrings, if we're talking about memory, my children know very well the stories of my sister who died when she was 17.
Yeah.
And of course, even my wife never knew my sister, but there are pictures of her in the house and wonderful, delightful stories from the beautiful to the silly and beyond. And I'm grateful that they've allowed me to give them more than just one dimension of who she was and how she's always a very important part of my soul. Now, when it comes to memory, the family members, every day is a day of memory. People will tell you, I think about them all the time. But for the rest of the world, it's out of sight, out of mind.
Right.
And I believe that Memorial Day is an opportunity to once again give more opportunities for people to connect to all of those, let's call them heroes, who gave everything, really everything, so that once again we can have the freedoms that we have and the blessings we have.
And in remembering then, appreciate the sacrifices that these very young people, the sacrifices that they made so that we could live in a free country and enjoy the blessings of liberty. My thoughts go in two directions. I was talking to another friend who said, she said, do you know how many nurses died in Vietnam? She said, more than 1,000 nurses, young women,
wow,
died in Vietnam. And we sort of forget that when we think of that conflict, unfortunate in many ways. But these are the people who responded to the call of their country, whether or not that call was wise, and gave their lives, in the case of nurses, serving those who were suffering. And we really cannot forget them.
There's so much more for us to learn. And that's why I'm a bit frustrated that Memorial Day becomes this weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, this year, because of the weather, there weren't so many people out at the beaches. I'm not sure how the barbecues went or any of those things. There were baseball games, even though I don't think that my New York Yankees really showed up and haven't showed up for a few days. We always say, what is it? Baseball, apple pie, and Chevrolet.
Yeah, that's right.
Or something like that. And I kind of wish that the word memory was in there at least a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, and I think of what President Lincoln did with memory at Gettysburg in that very brief speech, where he ended by saying, it's for us the living to be dedicated to the great cause that remains before us. And the great cause remains before us. There's still a huge challenge in our world to make our communities, to make our country, to make our world a just and decent place for people to live and thrive. And I think in some ways that's the charge of humanity. It's the charge of memory. It's also the task of religion.
But you need to hear those words.
Yeah.
And if people are busy doing other things and don't spend time on memory, then they're not going to be inspired. That's not going to become part of their memory.
Correct.
I feel the same thing about Veterans Day. I personally, and I hope that those teachers and students out there aren't upset with me, but I kind of wish that schools were open on Veterans Day, at least for part of the day. What for? To have a ceremony. Maybe to have a few veterans come in for them to learn what their sacrifices were.
I mean,
thank goodness they survived. But to respect and to honor what Veterans Day was supposed to be, rather than it just being a day off.
Right.
And even if it was, we need to, let me start that sentence over again. The students need an opportunity to sit and to listen.
Yeah.
Or hopefully listen, but at least to have the words presented to them and the thoughts presented. And somehow we've structured it in such a way that it's too easy to ignore or to be, as I said before, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, to be forgetful rather than to remember to forget. And when we forget, we lose a part of ourselves and who we are. And again, when you speak, I'm thinking of how important it is to celebrate the realities of our lives. So it's not enough to sit around and remember Grandpa. For this woman who came to church, she brought his flag, she brought his medals,
right,
and she brought something that's a vibrant and living reminder of who he was for her, and so he can be that for us as well.
And I think we have a caller.
Yes, how can we help you?
So years ago, we went to a ceremony at Franklin Avenue Elementary School in Pearl River, and they invited the veterans on a weekday so that the children could assemble in the gymnasium and meet the veterans and so on. It was lovely.
That's a perfect, perfect thing. I wish more people would do that. And I'm so grateful that you shared that, because that's exactly what I think that we need.
Okay. Yeah.
And I'm sorry, you had more? Oh, I think you're gone. But one of the things that we can do as citizens, as residents of Clarkstown or Nyack or Pearl River, wherever you live, is to go to your school boards and say, look, here's what we want. We want celebration of the great memories that make our country and our culture great. So let's, on Veterans Day, let's honor the veterans. Let's hear some stories from some of these now aging guys and gals who in their prime gave up years of their lives and maybe lost some functionality in their arms or their legs, or they're carrying some wounds around that are still bothering them. Let's hear their stories. Let's hear what service meant to them, because we can learn from them and we can deepen our own human spirits by knowing what motivated them to serve and to risk everything, lest we lose what is more than everything.
One of the most powerful experiences that I have, sadly it's at a funeral, is when there's the military moment in which, if they were in the Navy, Army, Marines, whatever it might be, there's the presentation of the flag, the folding of the flag, and it doesn't matter how many times I've seen that ceremony, it resonates very deep inside of me. And I don't have anyone in my family that has served in the military. My father was in the Navy back in 1945, and because of some kind of medical issues, he was only in for a few months. But so I don't have all of the, I didn't inherit any of those stories from him, but I find it quite meaningful. And when the soldier comes up to the family member says, on behalf of the President of the United States, a grateful nation, and whatever the other words are, it really resonates so deep inside. And I'm grateful at that moment that we took the time to recognize, again, the sacrifice. And even if they didn't lose their lives, they gave up years of their lives,
right,
to be away from family, maybe to delay starting a family as well.
Yeah.
Because way back when, in my parents' generation, people got married a lot earlier than they do today. And and it's quite meaningful.
Yeah, we just last month buried one of our longtime congregants. He was close to 100 years old, Artie Erickson, just a wonderful, kind, decent man. And when the war started back in 41, 42, he joined the Navy and was in the Pacific, was on a ship that was torpedoed, saw a lot of his friends die.
Yeah.
In the service of their country, and they came back, and he lived an American life. I mean, he got his education, he went to work, you know, he built a life for himself, and he was beloved by his neighbors and his family, and he had a good long life. He would have been bar mitzvahed a few times, I think, because and that's a Paul tells me if you live 70 to be 70, you've lived a full life, and then every 15 years thereafter,
13 years.
Pardon me, you get to be bar mitzvahed again. But Artie lived this wonderful life. He passed away, and the Navy sent two officers and a bugler out.
Yeah,
and there was at the end of his service this beautiful ceremony of folding the playing taps, folding the flag, and presenting it to his family, and it's on behalf of the nation, of a grateful nation, and that is a ceremony that builds us as a community of people. It's the ceremonies, the ceremonial parts of our lives are incredibly important, and we lose them to our detriment.
That's the blessing of ritual, by the way.
Yes, yes.
And I once had one of the rabbis that used to teach at my seminary, Rabbi Neil Gilman, Rabbi Dr. Neil Gilman, used to say that it's not a question of ritual or no ritual. Everyone has rituals in their lives.
Yeah.
There are the religious rituals, but sometimes when you're raising young children, the rituals, the way you put them to bed, good night, sleep tight, sleep tight. You know, the same words you say every night, and the door has to be open this amount or closed this amount, and foo-foo's got to be here on the bed, and whatever it might be, all of these different things. But so we all create rituals because they're comforting, and they also they help us connect. Yeah. To greater issues. And I think that when it comes to Memorial Day, we need more of those rituals to experience and not to be distracted from. I have a minor pet peeve. It's not really a pet peeve. I wouldn't go that far. But at those funerals, when they fold the flag, et cetera, and they play taps, I don't know if you noticed, but most of those bugles
are not bugles. Yes.
They're electronic. And the person pushes the button. But every once in a while, there's an actual bugler that shows up, and I'm just mesmerized by that and not distracted by the fact that... But it is better to have that bugle to the person's face rather than... I remember when they used to have the CD player.
Oh, yeah.
That would play taps.
Well, I'm happy to say that at Artie's service, they had a real bugler, so you would have been happy there.
Uh-huh. Because it just feels...
It makes it more authentic.
Right.
Authenticity is an important part of ritual.
But it's the thought that counts. And the idea that they created that taps moment, I'm grateful for that.
Absolutely.
Even if it's not an authentic bugler that's there.
But the point you make sort of pushes us to think where are the other places where we can create rituals to honor, in the case of Memorial Day, those who have given their last full measure of devotion. Where can we honor our beloved family members? How do we do that as families? You know, every family is, as Rabbi Kurlin says, every person, every family, that we develop rituals. Well, let's develop them mindfully. What do we want to ritualize? What do we want to celebrate in our lives?
So I want to stay with the memory issue, and I have a question for you. I'm not sure in the church when you remember your loved ones, those who are deceased, those who have died.
Mm-hmm.
Are there moments that rituals have been created to remember your loved ones in the church?
We probably could do it better, but there are times within, say, a Sunday service where we pray for those who are living and deceased.
We have two particular ways in which we know that we must remember. One is the Yiddish word is yartzeit, from the word yar, which is year. It's on the Hebrew day of death. Every year is a person's yartzeit. And you remember that person. Sometimes you say that memorial prayer that it's the mourner's Kaddish.
Yeah.
On that day for the three services of the day that we have, starting, of course, the night before, because the day starts at night, and it was evening, and it was morning the first day. And that's one thing that people will come to synagogue in order to say that special prayer and to be surrounded by other people. And the nice thing is that other people around you get to learn a little bit more about your loved one who you lost whatever number of years ago. The other is that four times a year we have a service called Yizkor. Yizkor is the word which is about memory. And it's on our holy days of Yom Kippur, Passover, Shavuot, and Sukkot. And the Yizkor service is one in which is all dedicated to memory. You can say, some people would say, you know, why do you want to remember sad things, loss? But the reality is that's always part of your soul.
Yeah.
There's not only that sadness in your soul that you no longer have them, but there's also the joy that you were given that blessing for so many years, for so many decades, for whatever amount of time it was. And that's why sometimes when we remember,
yeah,
sometimes there's both tears and smiles at the exact same time.
Well, and that the power of memory, of remembering, is that we bring, to a certain extent, we bring people's spirits back to life again.
Oh, absolutely.
They live in us and with us. I think it's probably time for our musical
time to
portion.
Take a little bit of break. Yep. We are listening to the Faith Unscripted program hosted by Clarkstown Reformed Church's own Pastor Rich Hasselbeck. Please check us out on our Facebook page and YouTube channel. Just search for Clarkstown Reformed Church or check us out on our website at www.crcwestnyack.org. And just a quick reminder for everyone that Clarkstown Reformed Church is now open for live services. So if you would like to meet Pastor Rich and the Faith Unscripted crew in person, come on down. Our services are held every Sunday starting at 10:30. And our address is 107 Strawtown Road in West Nyack, New York. And a reminder to ask any questions during today's program, please give us a call. Our studio line is 845-429-1700. And if you would like to send any questions to talk about on one of our future shows, please send a message to Pastor Rich at revrich@mac.com. That's revrich@mac.com. And for the musical portion of today's program, we will play, and I'm going to ask Rabbi Kerlin to help us out with the pronunciation on this one. It's Mi Shabarach.
You did a great job.
Oh, thank you. Featuring soprano soloist Beth Valenti and Susan Brown on piano.
And before we start the music, Mi Shabarach has a very interesting translation that's very appropriate. So, Paul, could you take us through the meaning?
Mi Shabarach, it's the beginning of a prayer in which you ask for something from God, and you turn to God and you say, basically, to the one who blesses, and then comes the request.
Okay.
And very often it is used asking for healing when people are ill, but there are other areas as well.
And so as you listen to our Beth Valenti singing this beautiful, beautiful hymn, please... keep in mind what you would like to ask the one who blesses, what you would like to ask him for.
Hey! May the one who blessed our fathers, Mekor HaBracha Limoteinu, the source of blessings of our mothers, Mishaberach Imoteinu, may the one who blessed our mothers, Mekor HaBracha Levoteinu, the source of blessing of our fathers, and with refuah shelema, is with a full recovery. So if you're thinking of somebody right now who is struggling with illness, whether it be coronavirus or any other illness, this is the time to think of them and keep them in your hearts.
Thank you, Beth Valenti. See, Paul, you're not the only person who has beautiful Hebrew music in the house of worship.
That song was written by Debbie Friedman. Sadly, Debbie died about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Debbie was a very charismatic, dynamic performer, and many of her melodies are used in a variety of synagogues.
Yeah.
She grew up in the Reform movement. She probably became a little closer to conservative, but then again, it's not for me to say.
Yeah.
And it was real shock when we lost her, because she was only, I think, 59.
She was a young woman. Yeah, I'm familiar with some of her other
work. And my wife adored Debbie to the nth degree. So my wife went up to her at an educational conference in California back in 1992. And she's wearing her name tag, my wife, and has her maiden name on it. We weren't married yet. So, and Debbie looks, and she says, oh, my goodness, your last name is the same as my mother's maiden name.
Uh-huh.
So my wife, Jerry, and Debbie's mother became dear friends. And the sad thing is her mother died just a few years ago. And now Jerry's in touch with her sister, Cheryl. And so we have that extra connection. Me personally, Jerry makes friends all the time. I don't have any friends, but I get to hang
out. Yes, you have. You have at least one.
I get to hang out with my wife's friends. So.
You.
Can I just add something?
Yes.
I needed to throw in some kind of chuckle, because when have you and I ever been together for 20 minutes without some ridiculous thing that we would say?
You're absolutely right.
So I want to add one thing. I think you need to add something to your message about your church being open live these days, right? I think you had to add the phrase, and lively. Right?
There you go.
You're not just live, but you're lively.
We are a happening place. That's right.
And should I share that ridiculous joke? It's a nice
religious... Oh, yes, please do, because...
It's a religious joke.
Even if you're not Catholic, you need to know how to make holy water.
Right. I mean, I always like to learn something about other religions.
And you taught this to me.
And I learned how to make holy water.
Yes.
What you do is you boil the hell out of it.
And you've got holy water.
And
that's right.
Oh, boy.
Okay, boys and girls.
Can I apologize now to everyone?
And that's the last episode of Faith and Scripture.
Remember, when you tell that to your teachers, boys and girls, attribute it to Rabbi Paul Curlin.
Oh, yes, right. Wouldn't be the first time I got in trouble, but...
And that's actually really cute. I've never known how to. I used to think I just had to bless the water and it would be. Okay. But we are back live and lively at Clarkstown Reformed Church, as you say. While we're COVID conscious, we're not scaredy cats either. I think we're coming back into a place where I'd say it's sort of like it was before the pandemic hit. Paul, how's the Nanuet Hebrew Center doing?
So we have had live in-person services with limited numbers, not every Saturday morning, every other Saturday morning, and every Friday night. But we would talk about having maybe about 15 people in a room that fit 270. But we just had...
We have that, and we call it a normal Sunday.
We just had a bat mitzvah last Saturday morning, and for the first time in a long time, there were 70 people that were there. But we opened the partition from the sanctuary into the social hall so that we could set up more seats for social distancing. We are still asking people to be masked for the reason, you know, there's that question, do we still need to be masked or not?
Yeah.
But the reason we did that is we want more people to feel comfortable in coming back in the building.
Yeah.
And we feel that there are a larger number of people that would come in if we remain masked than those that would stay away if we demanded they wear a mask.
Yeah, yeah.
So we're hoping that more people start to get to that comfort level and that we all stay safe. In July, I believe we'll probably be open every Saturday morning again.
That's great. So. That's great. And something exciting is happening at your place, too. Two congregations are coming together.
Yeah, it's in the hands of the Attorney General. All the papers have been sent.
I can't go
into great details because there's still a lot of things that have to be worked out. And those in charge haven't given me permission to really announce. But there's another congregation that's going to join with us, and we're going to be in our building, but it's not going to be our building. It's going to be
collectively your building. Yes.
And we will change our name.
Oh, really?
Yes. It will no longer be the Nanuet Hebrew Center, which, by the way, doesn't really make sense since we're a new city, New York. But when we moved over... This is one of these crazy things. When we moved over, the first ritual committee meeting I was at when I first arrived in 1997,
they
had done a survey of the congregation and all these proposed names for their new location. And one of them overwhelmingly was chosen by the congregation that they loved. Somehow, the board never acted on it. And they brought the name Nanuet Hebrew Center over the border into New City.
Huh.
But now we will have a new name. I'm not going to give out the new name yet because that's something I'll hold on to. But I will tell you, they rejected a number of the names that I had proposed.
The Rabbi Curland Center?
No. One of them was, I thought, you have some synagogues called Sons of Israel, things like that. I thought we should call it Israel R Us, and we get a big backwards R on the top. The other is, you have to know a little bit of Yiddish, so I'm going to ask you. You know the word kvetch?
Yes.
So I looked at some of the church names, and I was inspired, but I had to make it egalitarian. So one of the names I proposed that everyone liked except for those in charge, I wanted to call the new name Our Lady and Gentleman of Perpetual Kvetch. So
it has a great deal of, I think it's got legs. I may borrow that myself if I could.
I think it works very well in any institution that.
And for those of you who are not initiated, the word kvetch means
enormous complaining.
Complaining, right. And there was a character that the comedian Soupy Sales used to do, and his name was Philo Kvetch. And the word Philo in Greek means I love.
Uh-huh.
So it translates as I love to complain.
But now, who would have thought that you would be quoting Soupy Sales?
That is why we call this Faith Unscripted. As a matter of fact, people will be calling in and asking us to bring a script.
That's right. And please do give us a call. It's 845-429-1700. And please call if you have any questions.
Well, have you seen any drop-off in folks coming to synagogue?
So there have been actually blessings and curses over the course of the last year. We have evening services every night. They run anywhere from 15 to 25 minutes, depending on the time of year, because when it gets dark too early, we can't do the afternoon service. And this time of year, since it gets dark much later, we do both an afternoon and an evening service. The afternoon service is probably about 8-9 minutes long, and then a little break of about a minute or so. Then we go into the evening service. Because of Zoom, we have more people that are coming to those evening services. Let's be honest. They don't mind coming to a 15-25-minute service. Friday nights also have increased, not only in person, which we've been doing, but also along with Zoom. So there's probably three times the number of people that would usually be there for a 6 o'clock service. Saturday morning, I don't feel as if I really connect to the same number of people when we were in-house. But remember, our Saturday morning service is at least 2.5 hours long.
Holy crow.
I mean, during COVID on Zoom, we start a half hour later, and we finish even earlier. So now we're doing an hour and a half service. But still, people don't like sitting at a long service in front of a monitor or watching it.
Sure, yeah.
So,
and there's something to the interactivity of being with other people that you can't replicate over Zoom or on Facebook. And while it's nice to be able to reach larger groups of people, and we've been doing that too. We're on Facebook. We had been YouTubing every week. We're having trouble figuring out or cracking the code of getting onto YouTube and Zoom using our live streaming mechanisms. But we're working on it. I've got my crack staff working on it even as we speak. But still, when we get back in person, that the energy of just being in the room and in prayer with other people is it's just, I've forgotten how much I missed it.
Well, to see the or to hear the voices blending together,
yes,
in the room, because on Zoom you can't sing together; it's chaotic singing because it's syncopated. I don't know what you want to call it, but the voices don't come in at the right time.
Yeah.
So
our guys figured out a way to do that by using an app called Smule.
And I got to write that down.
With Smule, each artist lays down a track on top of the others.
I'm talking about the congregation just singing along with our cantor.
Yes.
At that particular time. But yes. No, I've seen those videos where everyone's standing in their own abode.
Yes.
And it's blended together. Beautiful things.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. But the congregational singing we haven't been able to do that until we get there.
And don't ask me for technology. I mean, the most sophisticated technology that I know is how to use my butter churn. That's about it.
Well, thank God for technology. It kept us alive through this pandemic. I never thought we
would. Yeah, there have been blessings. But when you talk about the Hebrew word for community is kehilah. And it's really, to talk about having a kehilah, it's the interaction among people. And one of my mentors, going back so many decades ago, said, what happens on Saturday morning in our services is wonderful, but what happens afterwards, where we have a lunch together, sitting around tables, is just as important. And I think maybe the reason that some people don't show up or don't come in is because we're not offering the lunch anymore.
Yeah.
I always joke that the only reason I show up is for the food. But
well, me too. In this sense, in Christianity, the good Lord gave us a meal to remember him by. And so that blends together both the theme of remembrance and the sacredness of meal. We live in such a rush and hurry world where people are, you know, grabbing on the go and eating in the car and sitting down at McDonald's and not really thinking about what's around them,
right,
other than maybe their newspaper. But in a better age, meals were what we shared with friends and family and loved ones.
And I can be honest that because of crazy schedules, I rarely sit down and have a meal with my wife.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the blessing of the Sabbath, because on Friday night, we have that beautiful Shabbat dinner.
Yeah.
And it's at least that one time a week where she's stuck with, I mean, she's... she sits with me, and we get to interact, and I get to look in her eyes, and
yeah,
it's the extra dimension to that eating moment.
Senator Lieberman wrote a book about Sabbath keeping, and his book is the first thing that really caught my attention about the beauty of what it is to have Sabbath. What it is to have a day set apart for God and for family and for rest and for recreation.
Right.
And I think that is just one more great thing that we, the rest of the religious world, can learn from Judaism, that it's important to take the time to rest, to reflect, and to be with each other. Another person who sort of set me on to Sabbath keeping is Rabbi Sacks, God rest his soul.
Oh, well, that's a dynamo in terms of, even now, they're still sharing his videos and his sermons, because they're so uplifting and so powerful.
Rabbi Sacks is one of my intellectual heroes. I often go to his website and listen to him.
I want you to know, my wife and I, we do, a couple times a month, we do a Tot Shabbat. For little kids, the reality is that the adults enjoy it, because it's on Facebook Live, and my wife is sitting there, and the puppets come on with her. What the puppets like is that I'm not on the screen.
But you're the voice of the puppets,
I'm the voice of the puppets, yeah. But the funny thing is that my wife is truly talking to the puppet. She's not talking to me. It's almost like, if you remember on Johnny Carson, when Jim Henson would come on with Kermit the Frog.
Yes.
And Johnny knew he was talking to Kermit. He wasn't talking to Jim Henson at that point when Kermit was... And my wife is that way with the puppets. And there's a song about, you know, the Sabbath rest.
Yeah.
And one of the puppets always says that, you know, it's not really sleeping, but it's probably, the better term is mellowing out.
Yeah.
You know, that to find that more mellow place inside of you. Boy, am I going back to the 60s. But find that more mellow place inside of you, connecting in different ways.
Yeah.
Becoming one with nature rather than fighting nature or trying to control nature. We become one with nature.
Yeah.
I had one of my former campers when I was a division head leader at a summer camp, that on the Sabbath day, they'd be sitting in the field, and I would say, you know, it's probably hard to do because we do it without thinking, but even on the Sabbath, it's kind of nice to no longer even be plucking at the grass.
Yeah.
You know, that you are part of nature rather than doing something to it.
Yeah.
And on Facebook about 5-6 years ago, that person said, I still think about this. And it's the little tiny things we do where we just feel that we are more connected in different ways than the rest of the mundane week.
Yes.
You know, and it's a spirituality that overcomes you in a refreshing, recharging way.
There's something to be said for letting go of all the cares, putting them all down, and just sitting in a place where you're one with God and one with your friends, and you have nothing to worry about, at least until business starts as usual, but for just a day. It's like having a day in heaven.
It's a day of gratitude.
Yeah.
It's focusing your eyes and your mind on the blessings in your life rather than worrying about what you don't have. Now, you can't get away from that completely because we're only human. But what do we say? Gratitude is an attitude, and to really focus on the beauty and the blessing.
Well, you know, one of the things that gets in the way of that is the way the world is structured around us. You know, soccer games on Saturdays and Sundays, and you know, the schedules mm-hmm. that pull people away from family and away from faith, and into the world of striving. And I think here's where our own human agency has to take over. We people of faith should ask for a better environment for ourselves and our kids. You know, if it's a toss-up between a soccer game and going to temple or coming to church, heck, church should win. The temple should win. And if coaches began to realize that their best athletes are home having dinner with their families because that's important, then what a statement that's making, right? If people in the neighborhood could see Christian families, Jewish families saying, the Lord's Day is sacred, and heck, I'm going to make it sacred.
Did I mention this at another time that we met? But Dennis Prager, who's a radio personality out in Los Angeles, spoke about, he was once asked to speak about raising Jewish children in a Christian society. And he got up there and he said, this is an easy topic. I have no problem about being surrounded by people of faith. I think it inspires other people to connect to their faith.
Yes.
He says, I don't see that as a negative. My challenge is trying to deal with the secular world. He said, so the church is not my enemy. They're my allies in faith. He says, my enemy is Friday night high school basketball games that's taking my children, that's trying to attract my children away from our Sabbath dinner
right.
around the table as a family. And yes, I think that we need those, I'll use the word holy, those holy moments for our families. Holy meaning most important, top priority. And I think that family and those moments of just not being pulled in all those other directions are really critical.
Well, the word holy means set apart. We try to blend in too much. We try to, you know, say, oh, look, I'm just like everybody else. I'm not a holy roller. But in fact, to be a people set apart means that we're different. And we should be proud of that difference. We should embrace the difference. The difference is that we follow the law of a good God who creates, who sustains, who loves us, and who asks us to put first things first. And I think the requirements of keeping the Lord's Day sacred, that should be one of the first things that we keep first. And it should be a non-negotiable. Don't let the high schools dictate our family life, because that erodes the family. And the family is so important to Christianity, to Judaism, to America. And when the family falls apart because, you know, Johnny's off to the soccer practice and Julie's got dance recital and Dad has to get to the office because he's got to finish the brief on the next case. It's a crazy lifestyle.
Yeah.
And one day set apart for the God who also took a day to rest is not too much to ask. And I think it should be an absolute non-negotiable.
So it all takes at least minimally the request.
Yes.
That can we adjust the schedules in any way? I had a family when I lived in Croton on Hudson. I had a family that the woman in February would go with a Jewish calendar, and she'd go to the public schools and to the Girl Scouts and to different organizations, said, this is a calendar where my daughter will not be able to participate on those days because of some holy days that were... Is there any way you could possibly schedule around that? And she asked the schools, I want to make sure that when my child has to stay out of school for the holiday of Tabernacles, of Sukkot, that she doesn't miss her class picture. Because, yeah, you can have a makeup of your own picture, but she'll never be in there with the whole class.
Yeah.
And in Croton, it wasn't an enormously large Jewish population, but because of the respectful way in which she went to the school board, they would work around, and her daughter was always in her class picture because they said, yeah, we could work around those days.
And I think that's a lesson for all of us. We can go to school boards. We can go to coaches. We can go wherever we need to go and say, look, these days are sacred to us, to our families, to our faith, and we hope that we can keep them sacred by adjusting your schedule.
Amen.
Amen. Yes. Oh, geez. As I pull my things out.
And thanks for tuning in to the Faith Unscripted program hosted by Pastor Rich Hasselbeck. A big thanks to Rabbi Curlin for making a special guest appearance on this morning's program. And don't forget to catch us here every Tuesday right after the 10 o'clock news, only on WRCR AM 1700.
And be in touch with Rabbi Curlin. Tell him how much you enjoy him here so he can come back more often.